And we're talking with Joshua P. Warren about his paranormal experiences and his research. And we'll also take your calls when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Joshua, before we go to calls, you were talking about a friend of yours who was about ready to do himself in. I'll let you pick that story up.
Yeah, in fact, it was when I was in college, and he was my philosophy professor, of all people.
Yeah.
And he and I became great friends because he had this enduring interest in the unknown. And, I came to see him after Christmas break and found out that sometime over the break, he had shot himself.
Oh.
And then his widow, whom I'd never met, contacted me and said, you know, he used to talk about the conversations that you guys had. And so I went to his house because she asked me to see if we could contact his spirit. And so it was a really surreal, somber experience. And I'll never forget seeing his PhD in philosophy from a very esteemed university and covered in blood, which was very symbolic and disturbing. There are a lot of elements that, you know, you could discuss about, you know, seeing that kind of thing. And then we sat down with one of the first really sensitive EMF meters that I had, and I just kind of sat back and watched as she had a conversation with him, and I saw this meter responding just on cue every single time in almost a binary fashion, you know, one time for yes and two times for no. And I watched her have this final conversation and gain this closure. And even though that was profound for me, I still always wondered if maybe this was some kind of a telekinesis, you know, if she had done this, because we went there with the purpose of trying to contact him. But years later, when I went to Myrtle's Plantation, as you've heard me talk about, and I, at that time, was completely unprepared to find that something started knocking and banging on my walls in the room where I was staying, and I had the whole place to myself, this was something that would beat on the wall and the furniture on command, and it was so interactive, so lifelike, that when I left that place, my head was spinning, and I finally said, okay, I've seen all the data that other people have presented over the years, but what happened to me last night was interaction with a spirit and what I believe is the spirit of the dead, and that really kind of changed my whole attitude about what we're dealing with here.
Well, that's good work on your part, though, let me tell you, and it's got to be pretty emotional when you go through things like that, Josh.
Well, it is, and I also think that considering that there is no coincidence, as you know, I know you believe as well, George, I feel like that I could sit down here and talk for hours and hours about experiences that have happened in my life that have specifically set me on this journey that I've been on, that have created this atmosphere, this environment where I was given the momentum and the opportunities and the understanding to pursue these mysteries and these phenomena. And I'm delighted that I've had this incredible, you know, journey. And sometimes it's extremely sad. You know, there is always pain when you see people experience loss, but I'm always the first to remind them, hey, we're all heading toward the same place. You know, some people have gotten there a little sooner, but don't worry. We'll be there at some point as well, and we just have to be satisfied with what we have at any given time.
Well, let's go to the phones. Joshua P. Warren, first-time caller, Shannon in Olmsted Falls, Ohio. Hey, Shannon, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm a big, long-time fan of yours.
Thank
George,
you. Thank you so much.
And I'm so glad that you got Joshua on, you know, on your radio tonight, because due to the fact that I, too, relate to the experiences that he has gone through growing up, you know, as a child and throughout my adulthood. But I got one that will give you the heebie-jeebies. We had a old family wall clock, mantel clock, that was been passed down from generation to generation. And the last person who had it was actually, it was my great-aunt Bessie's clock. And supposedly, she was a natural witch, and right before she went in a nursing home, she put a curse on the clock because she knew that family members would raid her house before she went into the nursing home, before she died. So she put a nasty curse on it. And it, you know, when we got it, we never believed it or anything like that. Nothing really happened. And it was one of those old wind-ups. The only time that, you know, would turn on if you wind it up. Well, my mom would wind it up and show, you know, her guests and everything, how this cute little clock would, you know, chime and everything. And one night, she had not chimed it in a, you know, quite a number of years. She was sitting down, eating, reading, and all of a sudden she's screaming for me. And she's like, did you hear that? My mom is actually deaf, so she can't hear this chime, you know, literally. You know, she was sitting directly underneath of it. So, and I'm like, no, I didn't hear it. And I was in the other living room. So, and I'm like, well, did you chime it? Did you touch it? No, no, I didn't do anything. I'm like, okay, that's really weird. So we opened it up, had not been wound up. So after a couple of days went by, everything was all quiet. And then all of a sudden it started up again. It chimed all by itself with me in the presence of the room. So I said, okay, we didn't touch it. No one touched it. We didn't have any one guest come over to show it off or anything like that. So I told my mom, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to tape it, bound it with some tape and see if it, you know, does anything more. So we put it back, taped the chimes, that, you know, together and everything so it wouldn't move or anything like that. We put it back up. Then within a couple of days, everything was all quiet. And then all of a sudden it chimed by itself. All by itself. No one has touched it. It went up right in the mantle. So we took it down, and then we opened, examined it, and the tape was still on it. There was no possible way that this clock could chime, not with the tape on it. So I had told my mother, I said, this is what you're going to have to do. Great Aunt Bessie put the curse on it. We're going to have to destroy it. We have to. So my mom, she's like, okay, you know, I'll have, you know, your brother Richard do it and everything. Well, she never did. She never had the heart to do it. She hidden away from me because I told her, I said, I want it out of the house. I was barely 11 years old. I told her, I want it out of the house. So she put it in her closet and tucked it away and completely forgot about it. Well, my mom passed away when I was 15. We were going through my mom's things and everything, and lo and behold, there was the clock. I looked at my brother, and I said, why is it still here? It was supposed to be destroyed a couple years ago. Okay, I will do it. I'm like, no, you have to go and chop it up. Chop it up, burn it.
Smash it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, my brother didn't do it. He put everything all in storage, and when he put, we had to put our my mother's things into a friend of ours, family friends, into their basement, into their crawl space. And I went down to survey the items and everything, and I looked in their crawl space. I said, "What's underneath there?" Oh, some stuff. And I looked, and I looked, and just square, I was looking right at it. I'm like, "Oh my God, what is this clock still doing here?" And I told my brother, you need to destroy it. Seriously, I don't feel comfortable even having this clock in their house. And because of Great Aunt Bessie. And I said, even though God bless her, you know, she was a good woman. I don't blame her for putting that curse or whatever. But when my brother did actually go back to retrieve this item, he literally went back. He found it missing. And he double-checked with the people and goes, did you do anything? No. That was the only thing that was missing.
Where did it go?
You know what? My only philosophy that I could think of, and this may be beyond some people, but I think it literally imploded itself into the next dimension.
Josh, is this possible?
Well, Shannon, that is a wonderful story because there are so many different fascinating elements that apply to what you've just described. I mean, for one thing, the idea of a cursed object is important, because we were talking earlier about how that a person can envision him or herself, and how that person wants to be perceived because of this sort of mind-body-environment relationship. Well, I do think that some people actually give up part of their soul, if not all of it, to an object, and that thereby becomes the physical representation. And that's why that, you know, some people are so attached to certain possessions. This becomes something that harbors their personal energy. Now, the biggest tell in what you just have explained was that the first time your mother heard it chime was remarkable because your mother is deaf. Well, see, this reminds me of people who come up to me at conferences who are blind, and they say, I have no sight. Is it possible for me to still see a ghost? Well, at first, I didn't know the answer. And then I started meeting people who are blind who see ghosts. And I started thinking more about the fact that it's not really the eyes that see, it's the brain that sees. It's not really the ears that hear, it's the brain that hears. The eyes and the ears, they just channel that information. And so this energy that was around this clock was a direct conscious energy that was traveling from the object into the consciousness of those people who were close enough to receive it. And for this to, you know, have such a presence that it did not want to be destroyed, that by whatever means it would continue to remain up until a certain point where that energy just vaporized, if you will, because everything has a lifespan, and then the physical object itself just disappeared, is actually a probability that whatever dimension was the stronger dimension that your great aunt was tied to might have been the place that this form eventually sort of zipped to, sprang to, shot to when that lifespan was gone, because it was always connected to her energy, and that elastic band of her spiritual energy is what eventually snapped it back and pulled it out.
All right, we'll go next to east of the Rockies, Daryl in Winnipeg, Canada. Hi, Daryl, go ahead.
Hi, yes, I've got a question about using a mag light to detect or get a spirit to show itself. If you turn the mag light all the way on, and then, you know, you got that, it's the twist on, twist off. If you twist it just so the light goes off, and then you set it down on a table, there's no way, there needs to be a physical interaction with the mag light to turn the light on. Would this be a good way just to do a quick test to see if there's any spiritual energy that would want to turn the light on for you?
Daryl, I'm glad that you asked that question, because not too long ago, I was on this show talking about a manual I wrote called The Poor Man's Paranormal. And in that manual, I talked about techniques that can be used that are accessible to almost anyone, that are very simple, to try to measure these mysterious energy fields. And that's one in the book, because really what we're talking about here is the nature of the electrical circuit of the flashlight. I mean, in order for the energy to start flowing from the batteries through the bulb, you have to have just an extra nudge there on the electrons to get them, you know, shooting through that circuit. And, of course, when you have a nice, strong connection, well, then you have a good conductor. They're going to flow through naturally. But if you have positioned it so that that conductor is just out of reach, then there is a little bridge there that has to be gapped. And it provides a little space of tiny, tiny resistance. And if you get it at just the right point, if there is a higher level of energy in the room, it will actually knock one of those electrons, so to speak, and it will create a flow that runs through that bulb and will make it illuminate. Now, an extreme example of that is taking a light bulb and walking around with it in a haunted place in your hand, and it'll just start lighting up sometimes, because if you get a really strong disembodied field, then it creates this electron flow on its own. We can do this artificially in my laboratory here in Asheville. Because you take a Tesla coil or a Van de Graaff generator, and you can get that electron flow running. But when you've got a flashlight there and you put it in that sensitive, delicate position, it definitely can indicate to you that there is a boost in the electron flow around it. And if that seems to happen in conjunction with what appears to be an intelligent influence, it can be a very effective, simple tool to try to communicate with the other side.
All right, good point. Josh, let's go to Greenville, South Carolina, and talk to Doug while we got a few moments. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, where is the best place to get these goggles and the training? Because I think you need to know how to use them before you spend lots of money. And I want to do this, so can you tell me how to get started?
Well, the first thing you should do is try to get, you know, great footage that you watch, that you analyze, that looks similar to what you're trying to capture. And I mentioned earlier, if you go to paratemporal.com, which is linked up at joshuapwarren.com, there's no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com, you'll find an operational report there. And you will see examples of different types of goggles that you can purchase. And I am involved with that site, so I have quality controlled everything that I can related to it. And you'll find out the best types of goggles for your purpose. If you're into UFOs, if you're into ghosts, if you're into cryptids, because if you're going to spend, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, you want to make sure that you get something that's going to be appropriate. And most of the people who sell goggles are selling them because that they're trying to target hunters or sportsmen. It's very, very specialized if you want to get the right gear for paranormal research. So that would be my advice to you. And when you go there, it's just, you know, very fun to look at some of the video clips of stuff that people have shot, which is similar to what Dean Worsing captured.
Josh, what's on your plate next?
Oh, goodness.
I know you don't stop.
Question. You ask me a lot of hard questions. That's always the hardest one. Well, let's see. I'm going very soon for a special behind-the-scenes tour of the White House, which is quite exciting.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah, hopefully I'll have some great stories for you about that because, you know, the spooky stuff that happens at the White House has always been very mysterious. And then I'm going to be at the Chicago Paranormal Conference. And that weekend that shifts from September to October. And also, you know, in the meantime, I've got a workshop where Patrick Burke is coming down here to my museum, and he's going to teach people his techniques for capturing full-bodied apparitions. And I'm working on just a bunch of TV shows and radio stuff. And, you know, I mean, it's just right now I can hardly keep up with everything that's happening.
You enjoy doing what you're doing, don't you?
That's the only way I could do it. I mean, I love this because, you know, I've been self-employed since I was 18 doing what I love to do. And in this economy, as you well know after the first couple hours of the show, it's hard for most people to get by just using, you know, practical means and practical products and practical jobs. Whether or not ghosts exist is interesting. But, you know, it's not a life or death sort of product for some people, but it shows you how interested folks are that right now I'm able to travel all over the world. I'm able to you know, run the lab and the museum just because that the stuff that I'm providing people find value in because they trust it. And I have my dreams have come true.
All right. I'm glad they have. And we'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. It's Alien Night on our next Coast to Coast program. First hour, Brad Steiger joins us as we talk about his latest work on aliens. And then later on, an abductee joins us with an incredible story on Coast to Coast AM. Josh, a friend of mine is shooting a movie with Billy Zane down in Dallas right now, and it's about ghostly apparitions. These things are hot right now, aren't they?
It's incredible how hot this stuff is. I mean, for years, I have been wondering when, you know, the cycle of interest would end, when it would burn out and go cold. And it's just picking up steam. I mean, right now, there are three new books that have just come out that I've all been involved with. There's one called Ghosts, Spirits, and Hauntings that I wrote a a chapter in, and it's got Lloyd Auerbach and Andrew Nichols and Bob Curran, Nick Redfern, Ray Buckland, Ursula Bielski, Marie D. Jones, etc. That book had just came out, is already selling very well. I'm doing all these TV shows. You know, we've got all these conferences and live events and tours, and I, you know, it may sound like I'm consumed with all the stuff that I'm doing, and then I turn around and I talk to other people in the field, and they tell me the same thing. So I really honestly believe that we are experiencing this point in time, which you might call the quickening, which, you know, speaking of Art Bell, is something that he was very fond of discussing. I wrote about it in The Secret Wisdom of Kukulkan, that there is almost like this time wave zero crunch that's going on. I think of it as, you know, taking a ball and dropping it on the floor, and it goes bounce, 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 and right at the end, it starts bouncing really, really quickly. We are at that point where events are happening extremely quickly, and the great thing about that is that you now, I believe, can manifest your desires, and they actually come true more quickly. Now, that's good if you're a positive person.
It's bad if you're negative.
Very bad. And I believe that some of the woes that we're seeing around the world right now are from, you know, unfortunately, the majority of people who have a pessimistic attitude. But it seems like that those people who understand that we can manifest great things are having a wonderful time. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, that line from one of those Stephen King movies, Needful Things, everybody who's got it's coming, is going to get it now, you know, that sort of thing. I really believe that the people who are interested in the paranormal are usually more open-minded, and they're seeing their desires manifest for better or for worse, but at least it's proving to them that this is a sort of a holographic or holosentient, you know, dimension that we're living in, and that you're not some isolated, independent, you know, victim of all these external circumstances that you cannot control. No, you are part of a collaboration, a cooperation, and that what you are projecting out is sort of morphing your reality, and people have these fanciful, wonderful, mystical minds, and that is creating even more paranormal phenomena.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Tampa, Florida. Jeanette, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
It's actually Jeanette, but that's okay. Everybody messes it up. Anyway, it's a pleasure to talk to you, George, and also Josh. This is an amazing show. I've been involved in the paranormal since I was a young child. I had my first experience with an apparition. Kind of scared me a little bit. I wasn't too sure what it was until my mom explained it to me. I guess it's in the family. All of us girls have it. But the reason why I called is because I did have a chance to go out to Virginia City, and I went into the Wabash, and having dabbled in the paranormal a little bit here and there, and I get feelings and I get rushes, and I felt so much sadness there, and the tears uncontrollably came down my face, and I didn't understand why. And I was sitting at the bar talking to the bartender about, you know, the city, and I felt something right behind me, and I thought it was somebody standing behind me, and then when I looked in the mirror behind the bar, there was nobody behind me. So I picked up my digital camera, and I turned it on, and I whipped around real quick and took a picture, and then I stopped a second, and I whipped back around, took the same picture in the same direction. The first picture, I had a face. I have two eyes, I have a nose, I have teeth, I have the chin. It's a picture-perfect face right on the side of the piano. There was nobody else in the bar besides me, my guest, and the bartender, and some elderly gentleman at the end of the bar. Now, I still have this picture in my possession, but I was wondering if you've ever had the opportunity of going out to Virginia City and what you have experienced out there, and if there was anything in the Wabash that you had found.
Well, that's a wonderful question. And you said Jeanette's not right. What's your name again?
It's Danette, D-A-N.
Danette, okay, all right. I made the same mistake. Anyway, so Danette, here's what's so interesting about your question. Have you been to my website tonight?
No, actually, I was on my way home from work, and that's how I heard you talking about this on George.
We can't get into your website.
Well, this is going to blow your mind, then, because If you go to my website when it's available, and again, we keep, you know, we're doing our best to keep it up. I have a clip that I put on there, last night, just for this show, and guess where it's from? That particular spot, it's the Washoe Club. You were calling it the Wabash, but it's the Washoe Club, or the Washoe in Virginia City, Nevada, right?
Right, the W-A-S-H-A-W, right?
Yeah, so this clip that I put there was captured by Billy Tolley, the guy I mentioned earlier also, who does a lot of the tech stuff for Ghost Adventures and Paranormal Challenge. He went out there, and he put down a recorder, which impressed me so much that I turned around and bought the same exact recorder, and captured some EVP that are so clear, so unmistakably distinct, that if I did not know and trust Billy Tolley, I would say we're BS. I mean, that's how good these things are. And nowadays we live in a situation here in a society where we got all this technology, and we have to be very careful about what we believe because it's so easy to manipulate things. He captured voices there that are just as distinct as my voice is right now speaking to you through the radio. And he even in the video clip, because there was a video camera running at the same time, you know, he puts, you know, the words up there as well. Now, I have not been to Virginia City. That's one of the places that I have not visited because I just, you know, didn't realize how very clear and distinct some of the stuff that can be captured is. But the fact that you did not know that I posted a video clip from that location on the site just for this show, and yet you called in, I got a little shudder, I got to be honest with you, because you called in here for a reason. And I was just telling George, we both agree, you know, there's no synchronicity. So I am going there because of, you know, I would have probably gone there anyway, but because of your call, I'm going there. And if you go to my website and you listen to the EVP, you'll understand why. And when I say it came from a source that is a trusted source, if I told you that I trusted somebody and they turned out to be, you know, a fraud later, then that would ruin all the work that I've done.
Sure.
This is, it's chilling how clear and amazing this is.
Well, I was going to say, most EVP sounds that you and I have heard, Josh, you know, you could barely hear like, hi.
Yeah.
You they're really not clear. So these are pretty good?
I am probably the most critical person that you'll meet in the field when it comes to EVP. In fact, you know, people have made fun of me about it. I even got into a bit of an argument one time with Art Bell on the radio because I am so critical. I've had people tell me that, you know, my ears are messed up because I don't think that sounds like help me, right? I want the EVP to be as clear as our conversation. I'm very demanding about that. And this stuff that you will hear is so clear that I know that, you know, you can call it class A or whatever you want, but as far as I'm concerned, it's either a voice or no voice. And that goes back to what we were saying about trying to determine how to filter out the specific frequencies for these things. Because if you use some kind of a big wide band recorder, you don't usually get those kinds of sounds. But if you use a recorder that has a narrow band, you get this stuff that blows your mind, and this has really inspired me and made me feel that, okay, we actually are getting somewhere.
It's about time, isn't it?
No kidding. Yeah, tell me about it, but that's part of the quickening.
West, Marcus is there, Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Marcus, go ahead.
Oh, hey, George. Hi, Joshua.
Hi.
First ballot Hall of Famers, I'm honored. anyway, for some reason in recent years, I seem to be like the companion for various wayward, colorful ghosts and spirits and various apparitions. But anyway, in 1995, me and a group of buddies went out to Lake Powell, and it's just an unbelievable place. And my buddy had a boat out there, and he goes out there 3 or 4 times a year, so he knew the lake really well. I mean, this is a vast lake. But anyway, it's just this epicenter of energy and spirits that just defies description, almost a mythological level. And anyway, we saw that where the Anastasi had habitated. We climbed up this ridge, and we were sitting right across from it. Just amazing, you know, those vertical cliffs. And anyway, I had this oversized ghetto blaster, just this ridiculous one back then, and CD, tape, radio. And anyway, we played it by generator, you know, during the night. And when we went out on the boat or hiking, we took it with us, and it was used batteries. But anyway, the weather patterns were totally schizophrenic and, you know, not controlled by, you know, human source either. And these crazy storms come up, you know, just without warning, and, you know, just the gale force winds, lightning, and the, you know, Placid Lake turns into like an ocean just with radical currents, and just, it's just amazing. And then one night we got hit by one of these storms, and our tents and all our possessions just got, you know, hucked in the lake, and they just went downstream, and my ghetto box was one of the victims, and it was, you know, covered in sand and water. And we plugged in the generator, it didn't work, and the batteries, it didn't work, and it was just, you know, it was useless. And about a week and a half later, I got home, and I for some reason dragged it home, and I went to bed and got up the next morning, and somehow I left it in the hallway, and I just kicked it with my foot. It's kind of stumbled over it, and all of a sudden, over the radio came just like a normal DJ voice, and it said, "Jerry Garcia is dead at the age of 53. And I swear to you, there were no batteries in that radio, and it never made another sound again. It was just the most amazing thing I've ever
experienced. That's classic. That is classic.
Yeah, and flash forward 20 years, I still, you know, CD technology, a little behind the times, but I had a player, and I dropped it, and the CD came flying out. It was a Grateful Dead CD, a Jerry Garcia song. It was about called West L.A. Fadeaway, about John Belushi's passing.
Yeah.
And the CD came flying out, and it played for a good 6 or 7 seconds after the CD came out.
How does this happen, Josh?
Well, for one thing, I want some of your old players there, Marcus, because sounds like you've got a knack for picking the right ones. This actually makes a lot of sense to me because I had a personal experience that this immediately reminded me of. Now, granted, of course, you know, stereos, they have capacitors and condensers that can, you know, store up charge and then release them for a short burst. But, I mean, how often does that happen to any of us, right? Here's the thing that kind of blows my mind. I went down to a haunted house in Lancaster, South Carolina, where some just terrible stuff had been happening. So extreme, there was even a death associated with it. And people were worried about me because they said, you know, you're going to get something that follows you home. You know, something's going to attach to you. And I never used to think too much about that. But then I came home that night after being there, and I was sitting in my office by myself. You know, my wife was asleep on the other end of the house, and I was working. And all of a sudden, the door to my office flew open, even though no windows were open. The door flew open, papers flew all over the place, and my stereo just came blasting on at full volume. It scared the heck out of me, of course. I almost jumped out of my skin. And the first thing that came to my mind is, well, I don't want to wake up my wife, you know. So I ran over to the stereo, and I pulled the cord out of the wall, and it still kept playing. And I kept hitting the power button, and it wouldn't turn off. And, you know, I opened the battery compartment. There were no batteries in it. And this thing sat there just blasting my eardrums until I actually sort of grabbed it. And I actually was so mad, I banged it and kind of smashed it up, and it finally stopped. And I don't know where such energy could come from, but I do know that when you have a field of energy that enters a place like that, it can flow through those wires and light up a contraption like that and make it turn on. And that particular night, as soon as I got, you know, it was quiet, I still felt something was in the room. And I turned and I looked into this, and, you know, space where there was nothing visible. And I spoke to whatever presence might be there. And I said, "This is my house, and you have no right to be here. You know, you get the hell out of here." And after that, there was this, you know, there was a sense of peace, like a pressure had been released from the room, and I never had another problem. But I do think that when these energy fields come in, they can, you know, cause that electron flow, same as I was talking about with the flashlight, and they can power up these devices.
All right, Josh, let's take a few more calls here. We'll go to West Virginia, east of the Rockies. Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Josh. How you doing?
Hi, good.
I had a question. I've always wondered this, like some people seem so susceptible to seeing ghosts where, like, I've never seen one. The only closest thing I've ever done is when I was about 13 years old, I was at my grandparents' house. It was a very old house, and I heard breathing at the foot of my bed, and then it seemed like it moved around the room, and I yelled for my grandmother, and as soon as I did, it stopped. But I was just wondering why some people seem to see them so much. And I've lived many places in my life. I'm 50 years old, and I've been up and down the East Coast, and I've just never seen anything. And I'm kind of glad I didn't. But I was just wondering what you thought about that, Josh.
Well, that's a great question, Tom. I'm glad you asked it so sincerely and honestly, because, see, I am a bit, tainted, I guess you could say, because that I've been out looking for this stuff. I mean, people contact me and say, here's what's happening at my house. You know, can you please come here? So I have an advantage. But I think for the average person, I mean, the reason we call it paranormal, the reason it's special is because it usually doesn't happen. And when things happen that usually don't happen, we're so used to the normal that we actually would second guess ourselves often rather than change what we believe is possible. I mean, I actually think that, you know,
30
some
seconds,
people,
Josh.
Okay, some people could see a ghost or an alien and they'd say, you know, I must have imagined something. This must be an optical illusion, because you would prefer that than to change your entire paradigm.
You got that right. Joshua, thanks again for just a superb paranormal moment and all these scary things, including the haunted statue, the alien statue. It's Joshua P. Warren. His website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Give it some time. You'll be able to get through it probably by tomorrow. For Dan Galante, Paul Mahler, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.